walking my sleep. What's rough around me seems to always creep. Every night and day.
Hi, this is Emma. I am a co-host of Transpositive, and I'm also the current president of the board of directors here at KABU. At KABU, we prove every day that people-powered radio has the ability to bring us together across distances and give us hope when we feel despair. Your friends at KABU want to remind you that generosity has the same power. Join thousands of KABU supporters from all around the world, and let's rally together to build stronger communities. If you can, just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number 44321. And thanks so much for your support of KBOO Community Radio.
Bedroom surprise.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operation and programming of KABU in accordance with the requirements of the Communication Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kabu.fm. The Policy and Governance Committee meets on the third Tuesday of March, June, September, and December at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kabu.fm. Please visit our website to verify if the meeting is being held.
Hi, I'm Tammy.
Hi, I'm Althea.
We're the hosts of The Gap on Fridays at 8 a.m.
It's a talk radio show aimed at bridging the gap in our understanding and in our community.
We talk local news, interview activists and community leaders, and invite callers for our community question.
Tune in to The Gap on KABU on Fridays at 8 a.m.
For current events,
thoughtful criticism,
and plenty of goofs.
See you there!
And indeed, you are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and like every Tuesday in June and until mid-July, we're going to be celebrating LGBTQIA2S+ heritage during Pride Month, part of our special programming during Pride Month. And tonight, we have our third panel, a very important panel, just like the rest, the queer BIPOC community. And we have four guests here, and I just want to remind you that we are live right here in the KABU studios. You're welcome to call us at 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. And you are definitely welcome to participate, ask questions, and get to know our guests here. And remember, we are celebrating the vast heritage of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and questioning, intersex, asexual, or agender, as well as two-spirit community members. It's so wonderful to be here with such a luminous group. And Artie, would you like to take it? Take it away.
Yes, absolutely. I'd like if each of our guests could go around and give us your name, pronouns, gender, and or sexual identity. And can you give us a little bit of context into your ethnic or cultural background?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for the wonderful introduction. I'm so excited to be back again here at KBOO. My name is Lindsay Danae Perez. My pronouns are they, she, and I am Tongva from Southern California, and I am Two-Spirit as well. Thank you for having me.
Hi, I am Aether, or I go by A. My pronouns are she, they, and I am agender, bisexual, and I am a mixed Black person.
Hey, thanks for having me. My name is Paisley. My pronouns are they, them, and I'm also mixed as well. And I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
Just like everyone else, I am super excited to be here. My name is Tajanae. I use my name as my pronoun, so Tajanae as well as they, them. And I identify as agender non-binary under the trans umbrella, as well as pansexual, but also no label, quite honestly. And then I identify as Black American.
Artie, would you like to introduce yourself, who you are, pronouns?
Yes, I am Artie Wall, membership director here at KBOO and helping out with these panels. And I use they, them pronouns. And I am one of the white hosts on this panel today.
Okay. And well, lastly, me, I'm Ender Black. I'm public affairs director at KBOO. I am Potawatomi, Native American background, and my pronouns are he, him. And it's, again, such a wonderful, luminous group here. And what about if we start with a direct question about ethnic and cultural background? Who would like to begin? Anybody? Whoever has inspiration,
talk to us. I'm happy to kick us off, if that's all right.
Let's go, Paisley.
Okay, again, my name is Paisley, they, them. And I would say, you know, I identify as non-binary if you have to put a label on it. Otherwise, I would just say that I exist. I grew up in Bend, Oregon, a very white town, about 80%, 85%, and that's in 2020. I grew up there, so I don't know what that looked like, you know, in early 2000s, but I'm kind of coming from a place that is very mixed. You know, I grew up with a white mom and began to really explore my identity as a mixed Black person when I moved here to Portland, when I sort of discovered it was acceptable to be that way. And it was acceptable for that to be part of my identity. So it's been a great journey for me to be here in Portland among other people who maybe are going through a similar situation, you know, grew up in kind of a small white town, came here and found some community here. So I'm not sure if that answers the question, but yeah.
I would love to just bounce off of that because I also grew up in a very small white town. It was a rural desert area in Southern California, which I lovingly refer to as the armpit of Southern California because it's just tumbleweeds and Joshua trees and big mega churches, which is where I was raised in as an indigenous person. And you can imagine the struggle of growing up and realizing that the Bible that I was raised with is the same one that was used to oppress my ancestors. Yeah, I think that my culture growing up is like this very white Christian girl, understanding that as my identity, and then reconnecting with my birth father later in life and him revealing this stack of evidence and research and family photos and genealogy and going, guess what? You're actually more connected to this land than you think you are. Oh my gosh, time to start decolonizing. So that's been my work, what I've been focused on doing for myself and also for others and inspiring others to decolonize themselves through my artwork, through the things that I do, like this wonderful panel. But yeah, that's a little glimpse into there. A lot of religious trauma.
Ooh, I would love to share next. And so I am brand new. I don't want to say brand new, but I'm new to Portland, Oregon. I've only been here for 4 months. And so, yeah, I know. Cheers all around. I'm from Wichita, Kansas. And I know when you hear Kansas, you probably like think cowboy hats and cowboy boots. But I grew up in the biggest city in Kansas. It has like a little over 400 to 500,000 people. And my neighborhoods, my schools, they were heavily Black and brown. So moving here was a huge culture shock. My neighborhoods were Black. My high school was Black. My friends, I grew up Black American. And so my dad is a Black Latino man from Compton, California. My mom is a Black woman from Ohatchee, Alabama. So raised in a Southern Baptist kind of atmosphere. My church was Black. Everything I did was very, very Black. And then 4 months ago, moving here, and mind you, I moved here without Googling anything. When I was telling friends and family, like, oh, I'm moving to Portland, Oregon, they were like, you know, it's like really, really white there. And in my head, it's like, yeah, it's white because, you know, white people like trees. I don't know. Like, white people move to Oregon because they like trees and they like mountains. I had no idea the historical context of why Oregon was so white. And had I known, I probably would not have chosen to live here. I had no idea. And it makes a lot of sense. When I moved here, I was like, why do all these white people want to give me like free yoga classes? It's probably guilt. I'm not going to lie. And don't mind you, I'm going to the yoga classes. I'm going to every free thing that they're offering me. But I was just, there's a lot of work to be done in Portland, and I see it happening, but it's a huge culture shock. I can go weeks without seeing a black person. And mind you, I also live in Southwest, so that also does not help. But it's different, and I'm adjusting, and I have to be more intentional when building BIPOC black relationships and community.
Mm-hmm. And can you remind us your name?
Tajanae.
Tajanae.
Yeah, this is Tajanae.
You know, I think there's a lot to unpack when you said, oh, I came to Portland without Googling anything. Nothing. I just came over here. Mm-hmm. So much we want to know about that. But anyway.
My experience is that I've lived in the Northwest my whole life. So I'm from Washington, kind of lived in different I lived on, you know, the east side of Washington and also the west, and moved to Portland in May of 2020, which was definitely a intense time to move here. But I think in my experience, I have, you know, been in these white spaces or majority white spaces for my whole life. And so in some ways, the work I have had to do is kind of that code switching aspect of like, oh, there is, you know, all these multi facets of my personality, of myself, that, you know, I think something with code switching is that like you don't necessarily see that you're doing it until you are like reflective of that behavior. And so like realizing that there's aspects of myself that I was comfortable to share versus not, and like what, like the difference in that in navigating spaces like with, you know, my full self has been definitely a journey.
And can you remind our listeners your name? It's spelled A-E.
Yeah.
How do you pronounce that?
Yeah, A-E is A. I also go by Aether.
So A. And you know, we have a caller waiting for us, and you know what? We should go ahead and take that call. Let's go. Hello?
Hi, am I on?
Oh, hi.
Hi, my name is Ram, and I just wanted to really felt urged to call in. I'm a Portland native myself, and I moved from Portland to near Wichita to Kansas in 2020. And so it was just like right down the road from Wichita, from one of your guests is from there. And so we were doing cross migration, and it's a very big culture shock to go from very, you know, outwardly queer. I can wear my beard, I can wear my boobs, or I can, you know, do whatever I want and nobody bats an eye in Portland, to where you go to, the Midwest and, you know, my partner being trans, me being, oh, 6 of 1, half dozen the other, you know, but going to that culture is very, it's like the opposite of liberating, I guess you would have to say.
I think Tajanae wants to say hi.
I do want to say hi. Hey. And I want to say I'm so sorry. Yeah, I spent 22 years in Wichita, and it was a lot of stealthing. I didn't come out till last year, but I knew what I was feeling for years. So I feel you. I'm holding you. I'm so sorry that it feels like that. Most of us do it to really protect ourselves, because again, like, it's Kansas. It's a different thing. And I resonate with you, and I'm sending you so much love.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I went to this senator, this very anti-queer, anti-trans senator. He was having a town hall. Mark Stefan. He was a huge jerk person, and he's having this in Haven, haven it was, right? This little tiny podunk town. Mm-hmm. And so I go there, and I'm going to be like, okay, you guys, let's rally for the queer community. And I was emailing people, all the people that I knew that were from different groups, and saying, mm-hmm. hey, let's show up, man. Let's shut this guy down. Let's mm-hmm. not let this bigot have this way of making these laws that are these anti-trans laws mm-hmm. that are just killing us. Absolutely, you know, like, I can be arrested. I go into the wrong bathroom. I've had all these problems all my entire life. And then you start to, you know, you live in Portland, you live in California, and then you come to Kansas, and all this, and it's not even the people don't even care. Mm-hmm. But it's Mark Stefan, dude. And so the Dems are there, and I know one of them because I went and, you know.
Oh, thank you. Listen, we appreciate your call. I think it's so wonderful thank you so much for calling. We're going to continue with the panel. Bye-bye. This reminds me of a question, but before we go to that question, you are listening to KBOO Portland, and we're live in the air room celebrating LGBTQIA2S+ Heritage during Pride Month every Tuesday, 7 p.m. live here at KBOO Studios, your favorite radio station. And you know, we were just hearing about Kansas and how Portland is cool, etc. Is this true? That's my question. Portland is known throughout the country to be this liberal, progressive haven where just come here, you'll be safe, be yourself and free. Is this true? What are your opinions about that? Whoever wants to go ahead with it.
I mean, personally, I feel like I can be myself in Portland. I will say that I can kind of echo what, I don't remember who said this earlier, about people just giving you free stuff. Oh, giving you free yoga classes. I find that if I'm Indigenous, I do get free things. People, it opens doors for me. And on one hand, I feel kind of dirty about that in a way. Like, I'm playing into the fantasy of letting, yes, reparations mm-hmm. as well. Yes, I receive the gifts. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know, man. It's interesting to me. There's like a balance there that I'm not sure I figured out just yet, but I'm more like, I just take that white person's money.
What are your thoughts, about Portland?
Yeah, I think that Portland, and like we see this, like Portland is a safe space for trans people, like mm-hmm. in a way that in so many other places in this country is just not true. But I think that there's also this aspect then in Portland, it's almost like an overcorrection, and there's like the tokenism is something on like it, another side, I guess, of like the exalting of BIPOC voices that is not, and I don't think it's a problem necessarily, but at the same time, it doesn't like, I guess what I'm trying to say about tokenism is like, it kind of, makes you like it feels like you're what's the word, like a representation of like your whole group mm-hmm. that you might identify as, rather than like your individual like personhood, and so I think that there's like two sides to that coin of like how progressive and like good Portland is, but there's also like this thing of like, I don't know, sometimes people are so worried about being like a good white person that it actually is like kind of a weird place to put like BIPOC folks, mm-hmm. I guess.
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds complex. Artie, do you have a follow-up question or?
Well, it looks like Paisley has something to share.
Yes, Paisley does. yeah, I have a lot to say about this. I mean, where I'm coming from, it's a step up, you know what I mean? It's definitely a step up from Bend in that I do feel more comfortable here. However, there are a lot of things that could use work. And I think, you know, when the rubber hits the road, that's when I found Portland to be not there, you know? I want to go off of the talk about tokenism. And one of the biggest things for me is I want to see, you know, black and brown people, not just on the cover of the Willamette Week, but I want to see them working there.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Because I've had a lot of times where I see, you know, who's making this art? Who's telling these stories? Mm-hmm. And it should be black and brown people telling their own stories. But instead, I've watched white people tell the stories of black and brown people. And it is so frustrating to me because I'm like, you want to use that image, you know, to further the narrative that this is a safe place, that this is, you know, a haven. But behind closed doors, where's the actual work, you know? So that's definitely been a big part of my experience, is that, you know, there is a tokenism that happens, you know, when it needs to happen. You know, it's like, hey, we need to show some diversity. Okay, well, let's get someone to make it look like that, but let's not actually, you know, go behind the scenes and hire someone for that, you know. So that's definitely one thing I've experienced, is that when the rubber hits the road, you know, most of these people who have the signs in their yard, Black Lives Matter, we believe in science, blah blah blah, they're not there, you know. What I mean, they're not there to actually help black people, black community. At least in my experience, that's what I found. So that, you know, there's definitely some work to be done. There's work to be done.
Yeah, we can keep talking about tokenism. And this is a critique. This is Tajane, by the way. This is a critique for really any white space. I experienced this in Wichita. I can see it in Portland. It's an issue. And so we talk about you want diversity, and we want to show how diverse Portland is, and we'll put them on the billboards, and we'll make them the police chief, and we'll make them the executive director of all these cool things, and president of this and CEO of that. It's just like, what are you doing? How are black people getting the material changes that we deserve? What does reparations look like? What does land back look like? What does I don't know, anti-gentrification or reverse gentrification, and giving, what does that all look like, instead of putting black people on these pedestals? I love the yoga classes. Please don't stop. they're great. I love not paying to go see a movie. That's great. But for me to want to stay here, or for black people who have been here for generations, what are you doing to ensure that they are thriving and not just surviving and not being tokenized for every magazine or every whatever you're doing?
Thank you all so much. You've all already talked on this, touched on this a little bit already, but we wanted to ask, how have your experiences as people of color varied from your white LGBTQI2S+ counterparts? Please.
Yeah, this is Tajane again. Even as something as stepping into my identity, and again, I identify as agender, non-binary, I use they, them. And oftentimes when people think of they, them, they think of someone white, someone with colored hair, someone with pink hair, someone with a lot of piercings. They have this set look of what not being non-binary looks like, of what being they, them looks like. And so when someone like me, black, I'm wearing braids, I dress femme, I can dress very neutral as well. When I step onto the scene, I'm not seen as that. Like, maybe you'll use they, them to, you know, make me happy or whatever, but you will always see me as a woman or a black woman, which is really, really frustrating. So oftentimes being non-binary, queerness is just centered on whiteness. And so people like me often get erased. And I feel like I always have to prove that I am non-binary. I have to prove that I am agender. And I feel like, especially in the beginning of my journey, that I owe you androgyny. Like, I remember when I came out, I immediately shaved my head. And I did that for me because it was liberating and I didn't know what it was like, but also it was just like something I felt like I had to do in order to prove, because if I walk around with box braids, they're still gonna she, her, me to death. And now wearing box braids and being so adamant, and this is who I am, this is Tajane, this is agender, I always feel like it's a fight to prove myself. And it can get hard, and it's just a journey of being comfortable knowing who I am, and everything else is just okay or whatever.
Yeah, this is Paisley. It's great that you brought that up, because I was writing about that and wanted to share about that here today, about, and it's not, you know, maybe related directly to the question, but what does queerness look like, you know? And that's a question I've been asking myself for quite some time, because there are times where it feels like you do have to fit into a certain box to be accepted as part of the queer community, you know? When the reality is, the queer community is the people who make it, you know? And if, you know, I want to wear a t-shirt and jeans, that should be enough, mm-hmm. you know, to just show up and say, hey, I'm queer and this is what that looks like. Mm-hmm. It can look like a t-shirt and jeans. It could be a skirt. It could not, you know. But I have found trying to find the definition for what it looks like and what is acceptable also, you know. Am I queer enough if I don't fit those boxes, mm-hmm. you know? If I'm just showing up as me, that should be enough, mm-hmm. you know? I definitely really relate to how you feel about, like, I should just show up as myself and mm-hmm. that should be enough to be accepted, mm-hmm. you know? But there are times where it feels like you need to look or act or do a certain thing in order to be a part of that community. Mm-hmm. So I feel you.
Well, I want to remind the audience that we're live in the studio and that you are welcome to participate by calling 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. And we're live with panel three of our special series in Heritage and Observance of Pride Month. Do we have any other question, Audie?
Yeah, to continue the same question of how has your experience varied from your white counterparts in the LGBTQ to QIA2S plus community. Lindsay, would you like to go?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you all so much. I feel like I'm learning so much from both of you just speaking. Your knowledge is so valuable. What I would like to present as a like little side path off of this question is I want to talk about how sometimes white people use queerness as a way to minority themselves, mm. and then they feel like they have an in mm-hmm. with the BIPOC community. Can we talk about that for a
Absolutely.
Second?
Absolutely.
Can we talk about how white Please. People sometimes, or always, I should say, are copying AAVE? Mm. They're taking girl, mother. Can we talk about that?
Can we?
Is it queer culture or is it black culture? Can we talk about that for
Absolutely.
A second?
Absolutely.
That's what I'd like to talk about.
Yeah, I think we all want to hear it.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, it's just the truth of it. It's just colonization in another form. Like, it's over. Don't do that. You can be an ally, of course, but like, just have some self-awareness and also do your own research, because it is exhausting having to be the sole person, the tokenization, right? We talked about mm-hmm. that earlier. That comes up a lot in my line of work. It comes up a lot in my life. It comes up a lot in the artistic spaces that I'm in, where I become the expert of all things Indigenous, when really I know just my own personal culture, my own experience, my own tribe, and my own experience of being in that tribe. So even that's unique. So I cannot speak. I'm not a monolith. That's a thing. Mm. They think BIPOC people are a monolith for all struggle, all oppression, but no, it's so much more complex than that. And just don't do that thing where you boil us down, put us in a box. That's not who we are. We're so much more than that, you know?
Yeah, I got to say this. There's often times where more recently, even the word BIPOC has been used to like eliminate or like group all of our experience together. And so like I'll be on a website and we're talking about black liberation. This happened a lot in 2020. This is Tajna, by the way. If you are talking about an issue, a black issue, I need you to say black. Mm-hmm. You cannot replace black experience with the word BIPOC mm-hmm. because our experiences are so different. If you are talking about a black issue, you need to be referring to black people. It is not a BIPOC issue. It is a black issue.
Exactly.
And I absolutely... I don't hate being grouped, but I do hate being in spaces where this is an obvious black issue and just people refuse to say the word black and they just group us into BIPOC. And there are some intersections and we can name that, but sometimes a black issue is a black issue and you got to be talking and centering black people.
That's right. In the same way that you would do with indigenous people mm-hmm. as well. Like we have some shared like traumas and struggles, but it's totally unfair mm-hmm. to lump us into the same group. That's so funny that you bring that up, because I was literally sitting across the dining table from my nephew this morning, and me and my sister were talking over breakfast, and he goes, wait, BIPOC, what does that mean? He's 17, by the way. Mm. 16? He's young. He's like, what does that mean? What is BIPOC? I don't know what that means. And we had to try to explain to him, well, it means black, indigenous, person of color, right? That's BIPOC. He goes, oh, why do they use that word?
Mm.
And I was like, oh, fair question. And then we're scrambling to try to think about like how it's a good thing and it's inclusive and it's meant to uplift people and to highlight people. And for marketing, you use it for marketing, right? Like if you're a BIPOC person wanting a community or events. But again, who's the person using that word BIPOC? And who is their audience? Is it actually people that are Black and Indigenous, or are they just doing that same thing where they're patting themselves on the back going, oh, we're being so inclusive, BIPOC, AAIP, PI, like, you know, like all these like acronyms.
I think that like originally BIPOC was supposed to highlight like the Black and Indigenous experience outside of just POC, because I feel like for a while like the acronym POC was just being used. And so then like there was the shift to go to BIPOC, okay, we're highlighting these, like we're highlighting these voices or like these identities that are included. But it's so interesting that now it's like kind of just become like a buzzword to use for marketing, like you're saying. And it's making me think of like the original question. And I feel like kind of an answer to the question that you asked, Lindsay, of like, is this just one specific culture or is it queer culture? Is that I think something that is different with like the BIPOC queer experience versus like the white experience is that in general, white people see themselves as like the main character or like the universal experience. And so in some ways they think that they can co-op people of color, Black, Indigenous people of color, which is funny that I'm like, you know, just thinking about that word, but they can co-opt those things because now that can be used as a universal experience, not realizing that like actually just because they see themselves as like universal doesn't actually mean that like other folks of other identities like see their experiences that way, if that makes sense.
Wow. Thank you. I love this conversation that we're having right now.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people in the audience, if you are a BIPOC person that is listening right now, you probably also probably agree. You know, it's, what is that? Is that a marketing term? Is it nonsense or should we keep using it? It's weird. And I have to say, you know, Lindsay, you said something about being Native American and people thinking that you're an expert immediately. Well, you know, sometimes I wear that hat. It's like, sure, ask me whatever you want about any Indigenous people in the world. I'll tell you everything.
Right.
Whatever. I don't know. But and then, you know, the next question is it's a two-part question, but it's basically one question. And it is, okay, there are many questions here, but what does it mean to be a queer BIPOC community member? And what do your white counterparts need to know and get better about being a queer BIPOC community member? And we can, you know, change this term altogether and just delete it from our vocabulary. That's what you want, okay? We can do that.
I don't think that's quite necessary. Right. I do think that BIPOC is a useful term. I have found it useful in the past, and I still use it today for a lot of things. And I would begrudgingly identify as BIPOC as well. And I think that, as a queer BIPOC person, I think that there's just so much intersectionality in these cultures that exist. It is kind of, you feel like you have to be careful sometimes, you know? So I can understand where a lot of like white allies may be like, oh, I don't want to offend. I don't know what to do. Let me just go read an article online. That's a good start, honestly. Or listening to a podcast or radio show like this, where we're having these conversations, that is an excellent first place to start. But yeah, get curious, and then Google is your best friend. Like, go on Google and just research what happened in Portland with Black people. What happened in Portland with Indigenous people? Do you know whose land you're currently on? You know, do you know why the names of the streets are named after Indigenous tribes? Do you know how was it actually founded? Do you know the reason that this monument exists? You know, just going deeper and asking yourself the questions and not putting the emotional or intellectual labor on BIPOC folks to do all of that for you and to explain it. Because while we're happy to do it, you know, I'm very passionate about educating people about these things, but it does get tiring being the only person being able to answer these questions, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I would say to answer this question, what do white people need to get better about? Listening to understand, not to break down what we're trying to say, not to defend yourself from what we're trying to say, you know, like, I found that I just want to share my perspective, and I found that sometimes that's met with, yeah, well, that's, you've never felt that way around me, right? Or I've never, you know, done anything bad, right? You know, blah, blah, blah. Well, I'm not sharing this perspective to attack you, you know, to demean you or whatever. I'm just sharing it so you know what it's like to be me. And I wish that more people who listen to that were actively listening rather than just listening to check a box to say, oh, yeah, you know, I listened to that panel. Okay, great. Well, what are you going to do with that? You know, mm-hmm. like, are you going to take that information and run with it and apply it to the relationships that you have with Black and brown community? Or mm-hmm. are you just going to say, all right, I listened to it, so that's enough work for me today. That's enough work, you know? No, you know, listen and try to understand as much as you can and put that to action, I would say.
The first part of the question is, what is, I think this is what it was, this is Tajnay, what is being BIPOC, this is so funny, being BIPOC and queer mean to me? And quite honestly, it is ancestral. Mm-hmm. It is knowing that my ancestors like hand carved this life for me, and they were also living authentic. It's Stonewall, it's the Dhokam sit-in, it's yes. Black Panthers, it's Black feminism. And it means to me that rest is my birthright, because I know how hard they have been working for me to get here. And so it's not being the educator. It's resting. It's taking yes. a nap. It's, y'all, tomorrow's Juneteenth. Guess what I'm doing? Nothing. Yes. Getting my free yoga classes. Because, yes. like, come on. It's so, my Black identity and my queer identity, they are one. You cannot separate that. And what do I want white, queer people, white people to know? My question, it's rhetorical. If you want to call in and answer, do y'all got Black friends? Are y'all a part of any other community other than yourself? And I don't mean this is like, tomorrow I'm going to go out and I'm going to find me a Black friend. Don't do that. But are you...
Buy them a coffee.
First off, yes. Buy me a coffee. Again, give me a yoga class. Are you intentionally building relationships and communities outside of the ones that look like you? Because I have found some amazing white, queer, white, trans people, and I don't feel tokenized. And when they do have these questions and these, I love answering these questions for them, because I know that they also have a care, and they're listening right now. I know they have a deep care and love for me. And they have become part of my community, and it's not allyship, it's co-conspirators. Like, I know these people would fight for me. And I have no issue answering any questions that they have. Yes, Google is your black friend. Yes, Google is your friend. But are you intentionally building community so that you can learn, so you have this personal experience? Because I think if we just settled on people just Googling, they don't know how to interact with a Black person, because it's all online. It's all unserious. It's not real. But if you are building relationships with your community, it'll make this thing kind of easier, and you'll kind of learn how to interact and how to support and how to be a co-conspirator, because you have people in your community. So again, do not go out and post ads for finding a Black friend. Do this naturally. Just go to some Juneteenth events and kind of like learn on your own how to be a better ally, co-conspirator, and how to be a better friend and supporter.
And I just want to remind our listeners that we're live at KBOO, and you can call, you can participate, 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. You can ask questions to Lindsay, A, Paisley, Tayane, and we're here. And would you like to ask the next question, Artie?
Yeah, a little bit of a pivot. I really want to ask, and this is something we've been going over with a lot of our panelists, how has your relationship with yourself changed since coming out?
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay, yeah. I was doing, this is Tajane, I was doing a little dance because I love this question.
Yeah.
I remember before coming out last year, I kind of, I tried so hard to find the language and the labels to describe me because I thought that I needed to be perfect when I came out. I spent a lot of time Googling the differences between gender fluid and agender or gender queer because I felt like I needed to get this perfect in order for people to see me, to understand me, and to believe me. It was a lot of doing the work for them. And while I was so busy trying to find these labels, my life was just passing me by. Mm-hmm. My life of being out and proud was just passing me by. And at this point, my relationship is, it's so fluid. And I come to the realization that I'm not meant to be understood or comprehended. And maybe there is no English words, there's nothing in the English language to describe who I am and who I'm going to become. Because who I am right now, I may cry. Who I am right now is not the same person from Wichita, Kansas, who shaved their head and had all these labels and all these things. Who I am today is going to be completely different than who I will be 10 years from now. And so my relationship is so fluid, and I'm honoring who I am each step of the way. I lay flowers at the feet of who I was when I identified as she, her. I lay flowers at the person who I was a year ago with a shaved head and so many different label pins coming out at Pride. And I lay flowers to myself today, being able to know and understand that there is nothing, there is no box anyone can put me in, and there is no language, no English language, because, you know, colonization and all that. There is no English language to describe who I am and who I will be. So it's fluid. Fluid has been my favorite word. My gender is fluid. My sexual orientation is fluid. My relationship structure is fluid. The only thing that's not fluid about me, I'm Black, and I'll be Black now until the day I die. That's the only thing that will not change about me. But everything else, fluid, and everything that will be, fluid.
Wow. You take a moment. That was amazing.
I would love to say thank you. And also I want to say how much I relate to that again, because when I was applying for this panel, there was a question, I think it was, you know, how would you describe your gender, or it was something like that. And I'm a huge Prince fan, and in the song I Would Die For You, Prince says, I'm not a woman, I'm not a man, I'm something you'll never understand. And I think about that all the time, because I'm like, you know, I might not understand it myself, and that's okay. You know, other folks are not going to understand it. I'm not going to understand it, but I'm okay with that because, like you said, it's fluid, it's changing, and I roll with that. I love that, you know, and I love feeling like it's an undefinable quality, you know, to just be like, I'm just rolling with it. I'm just myself. I'm just me. Stop trying to put me in a box, you know, because you can't, you know, I'm just me. And to kind of circle back to the question, how has the relationship changed with myself since coming out? You know, this year I made it a therapy goal to come out to my dad, and I achieved that goal, you know, and that was a big piece for me because I felt like having that support would allow me to find myself more, you know, and express myself more freely. So I would say since coming out to my dad, I've felt like I've been able to spread my wings more, and I felt like I could be more unapologetic about who I was and feel more comfortable knowing that I was lucky enough to have that support behind me. So yeah, I guess maybe that's my answer. Yeah.
Wow, this is riveting radio, and we have a caller. Would you like to come in? Come in, caller. Hi.
Hey, can you hear me?
We can. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for having me. My name is Ursa. Oh, no. Wonderful to hear all of these voices, a couple that I recognize. My question to the panel is, so I feel like we've been talking, you all have been talking about this a little bit, but I'm interested in hearing about how these identities racial identities, gender, sexuality, sort of relational identities, interplay with the role you each either like fulfill or, you know, aspire towards in community.
Oh, this is a really good question. I think I'll take this question first. So my role as a two-spirit Indigenous person, I work at a nonprofit called SMRC. It stands for Sexual Minority Youth Resource Center. And it's very closely tied to my culture and my sexuality and who I am as a human being, you know, and my work on this planet. I feel very moved to like be in these spaces and community with these young queer folks. We serve ages 13 to 24 and connect them with resources like clothing closet, gender affirming gear. We have food pantries, counseling services, temporary housing. It's just and employment opportunities and education. So that's, yeah, that's it. I mean, that's everything. I just want to wrap around these young folks and be the person that I wish could have been there for me when I was growing up as a young queer person who didn't know who they were and didn't understand why I felt the way that I felt about certain characters that I saw on the television. Yeah, I think that it's just really important to uplift young folks and to try to show them a better way of like knowing themselves earlier on in life and that there are resources that exist here for them specifically. Yeah.
Yeah, I love this question. Thank you, Lindsay. And hi, Ersi. Yeah, I love this question. And it makes me think about my, like, my work as a, so I work at a, like, transportation program for elderly and disabled folks in Portland. And I think that my role, like, within being who I am and, like, showing up fully, authentically as myself is kind of challenging what a lot of these older adults might not, you know, they might not know. Like, I talk to them mostly on the phone, so they might not know that I'm, you know, Black and queer, but, like, challenging those perceptions of who they might think that type of person is and like allow myself to show up fully and just like embody, you know, embody myself, but also kind of push back on like what those preconceived notions of like who that type of person is I think part of like my work. I also am like a tarot reader and like a spiritualist person. And so I think a lot of the important parts of that work is like allowing other queer people to show up fully as themselves and like see that that is a worthy thing to be and is like their space to take up, rather than like keeping themselves small, because I feel like as queer BIPOC people for so long, or at least for my in my own experience for so long, I just kind of tried to you know, tried to what'd be the word, like not show all these aspects of my personality or like who I am because it felt safer in a sense. But it's actually so much better and like safer to my overall growth and well-being to like allow myself to be my full self, if that makes sense. And like I really think that part of my work like here on Earth is to help other people embody that too.
Hey, Ersa, good to hear your voice. To piggyback off of what A said, you know, I think it's crucial that we all are the most authentic versions of ourselves because other people need to see it's okay to be like that. And I think, you know, one of my largest motivations is to be the person that I needed when I was younger, you know, because I don't think that I really had anyone to sort of look up to as a young mixed person in Bend, you know? So I think part of my goal in living authentically to myself is hopefully to inspire others to see it's okay to be authentically yourself, mm-hmm. you know? And whether that's you're mixed or, you know, you're not, I just want to inspire others to feel like it's okay to be 100%, you know?
Yeah, when, this is Tajne, when you asked that question, my immediate thought was work, the work that pays me. So I'm a community engagement manager at Oregon Ranked Choice Voting, and I was trying to sit here and try to fit how my identity supports the work that I do, and it does. It's electoral reform. It's, you know, it's voting work, but that's what came to mind. But that's not what's in my heart. And what's in my heart is, I come from a community organizing background, community advocacy background. I've been doing that since I was 19, and I was at the forefront of a lot of these things. I was the leader. There's photos of me with megaphones leading protests. It was. I've always been in charge, and it was really draining, and that's almost 10 years in the game. And it wasn't until recently where I quit politics, well, in Kansas, I'm doing it now, but I quit politics with the goal of taking a back seat and focusing on spade work. And spade work is that grunt work, the work that doesn't get acknowledged when we think of big movements. And so when we think of the civil rights movement, we think of Martin Luther King Jr., but we don't think of Ella Baker. We don't think of the people who had to set up the chairs for the meeting and take down the chairs and put the flyers up and coordinate everything and do the cleanup. And someone has to get catering, and who's going to watch the kids while people are like, we don't think about right. that. But those are the things that sustain a movement.
That's right.
And my work now has pivot, at least the work that doesn't pay me, has pivot, and really inspiring people, because I think a lot of times people feel like they need to be in charge and be seen and the Martin Luther King of their movements in order to be seen. When in actuality, it's you showing up, it's you doing that spade work, it's you doing the flyers or making the graphics or doing whatever that sustains the movement, and that is so that's not so important. That's just as important, because that's how we get through this. And so I'm focusing on a lot of spade work, and what does spade work look like in my life, and how can I support all the movement, especially because I'm new here. I don't believe in moving to a new community and trying to be the forefront, because there are already mm-hmm. leaders doing the movement.
Right.
They're already doing the work. So how can I support you? How many flyers? I got my own stapler. What do you need me to do? And so for me in this moment, it's showing up authentically, like everyone says, but it's also, you don't need to be this big thing to make some real change. You know, show up to some meetings and put some time and some effort or some money into the things that you're doing, because again, this is how we sustain movement. And don't feel intimidated that you need to be on the front page of all these things, because it's cool and it's nice and it's fun, but again, how do we keep these movements going?
Wow, and I want to remind everybody listening, either on KBO 90.7 FM here in Portland, or on our website, kbo.fm, or our app, that we are right now live in the studios with our third panel in honor of the heritage, the rich history and heritage of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer in question, and intersex, asexual or agender, as well as two-spirit community members. And we're very proud to be able to have guests speak about very important things like you just did. And I think it's educating our community. It's educating people. It's putting a seed that it's meant to sprout. Mm-hmm. And
yes, I'm moving on to one of my absolute favorite questions to ask our panels. And Lindsay, you were asked this in our first panel, so I'd love if the other three panelists could give us a head start on this. What are moments of queer joy you have experienced?
It's so recent. So I just got back from a 5-day, 4-night trans camp in Washington, I'm still reeling from it. Like I still can't believe I did that. It was 100% trans, non-binary, and 80% BIPOC. It was 80% BIPOC. And it was the most transformative thing I've ever done. That is the most trans people I've been around, non-binary people I've been around. And my time in Portland, the most black and brown people I've been around. And it was joy. And I wish I could take a piece of it and kind of share it with everybody here, because joy doesn't even capture what I am feeling. It would. I kayaked, I made s'mores, I cried, I mourned, I sat in the rain, I hiked for the first time. I kayaked to the middle of a lake for the first time. I saw 3 bald eagles. And again, this all sounds very mundane probably, mm-mm, but to be surrounded by so many trans people and to not mask, I laughed my hardest when I was there. I felt like I didn't need to code switch. I felt like I didn't need to over-explain my gender identity. When I stepped foot in a room, people saw me as Tajanae or agender or non-binary. And I remember when we were packing up, I was so sad. I remember packing up and we immediately left, and me and my friend Sid, we went to a diner, and I was wearing this camp shirt and it had my pronouns on it. It had they, them. And before I stepped foot out of the diner, my heart sank and I got really anxious because I knew I had to take that shirt off before I stepped into this small town, predominantly white diner to go eat. And so I took it off and I left it in the car, and I felt, I don't know what I felt, but it was scary. It was sad. The best way I can explain it is, like, you know, the water gets really, really cold in Oregon, and if you were to jump in, your body would feel that shock. It was, when I stepped out of the car and stepped into that diner, it was like my body was frozen, like I was in very, very cold water. And I'm still mourning that I left that, but I'm also searching for that. So I came back to Portland, and I was like, I'm going to do this. I don't know if I can do a camp. I can do a picnic. I'm going to do something, because that is an experience that all trans people, all non-binary people, all BIPOC queer people need to feel. And that feeling is just authentic. Feeling like you don't have to hide yourself. Feeling like you don't have to correct your name when someone says it. Feeling like you don't have to correct your pronouns. It's being seen fully as you are. So I'm carrying that in the spaces, and I'm more intentional with the community I built, because we are deserving of that.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
This is Paisley here, a moment of queer joy. I would say... it was a time when I realized that I was not alone. I was with a few friends of mine. They were all trans, and we were at a church, ironically, having a picnic in the grass. This was 2020. And, you know, I was still kind of new to figuring out who I was and what I wanted to go by, whatever. And we ended up just talking about our upbringings, and a lot of us had come from religious backgrounds. And I was able to talk about that with them. And I guess just sharing that in common and realizing I wasn't alone in that sort of conflicting feeling that you get when you come from that background, it made me feel like I had been given a hug, you know? Like, I felt like, yeah, I felt no longer alone. I felt like I was very justified in the way that I felt, and I felt very seen. So I think that was a really pivotal moment for me to be like, I'm not alone here, you know? I'm not alone in this. Other people have been feeling how I feel. And to know that I wasn't alone, I guess, was just a really comforting thing, so.
Yeah, that's awesome. My moment of queer joy was recently, actually. Last week, I went to a really awesome event that was put on by 2 Black for Binaries. And it was a all-Black affinity space in a hotel. And there was a DJ, there was food, there was drinks. And it was just so wonderful to be around all Black, queer, trans folks, and just like to be in that space and like to look around and be like, oh, like there's something that like we all here like get each other and like see each other like within this space. And that was just like so heartwarming. It felt like a hug. I like how you said that. And yeah, it was just like a really wonderful thing to experience. And 2 Black for Binaries puts on events all the time. Would highly recommend looking into that organization and getting involved if you are a Black person, but also they host events for other queer folks as well.
That's awesome. Thank you guys so much for sharing. I think for me, the moment of queer joy that I'm most focused on right now is this present moment, as I'm sitting around the table with all of you and getting to have this wonderful conversation. I really appreciate the knowledge and experience that all of you have brought today, and so much of what has been said here has resonated with me on such a deep soul level. Like, I can feel it in my sacral. Like, there's so much power sitting at this table right now, and I think that we all should just take a moment to appreciate how cool and unique this opportunity is to come together in this space and speak our truth, speak our experience. Thank you so much for hosting us and for creating this dialogue and conversation where we get to have these wonderful connections with each other. It's truly so pivotal, and I am just really grateful. Yeah, I'm just feeling so happy to have contributed and to have met everybody in this room. Thank you so much. And I know that my queer ancestors are currently dancing for joy as well. I can feel it. It's so powerful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we're super excited. We're super happy to be able to provide this opportunity. This is what KABU is all about. This is what community radio is all about. That's what Portland, in theory, is supposed to be about. And we're approaching the end of this panel, and we don't have too much time at all to discuss anything. But just one question. What do you want younger generations to know or do? Or do you have any advice you'd like to share? Who would like to take it? And I think that's going to be the end of the show.
Don't be too fixated on the labels and the boxes that people try to put you in. You are authentic, just showing up as you are. Focusing on the language, because there is no language to describe who you are. Just be.
Just be. Well, thank you so much for tuning in. You've been listening to KBO Portland. Thank you so much to our program director, Asia Hawthorne, who's board hopping right now. Thank you, Asia. You saved our lives here. And our chief engineer, Arthur Risotto, for his work here. Thank you.
KABU's board is recruiting directors. In preparation for our annual board election in September, KABU's nominating committee will be holding virtual information sessions from now